The U.S. and China have finally come to a trade deal. What are the implications for businesses and the subsequent trade negotiations? To learn more, we sat down with Craig Allen, president of the U.S.-China Business Council, who recently spent a week in Beijing meeting with senior Chinese officials. Hi, Craig. Welcome to MCHAM Hong Kong. You recently met with senior Chinese officials in Beijing. Could you tell us a sense of the sentiment on the ground?
Well, I think that both in Beijing and in Washington, D.C., that there is a consensus to move forward on a trade deal to be initialed by both presidents on November 16th in Santiago, Chile, at the APEC meetings. And I think that in both capitals, there's also a rough agreement on what that agreement will look like, and that it will include intellectual property rights, market access, something on exchange rates, and purchases of agricultural goods. And it gives me hope, cautious optimism, that the two sides are moving forward towards a common objective. And that is not to say that all of the problems are resolved, because that is would clearly be inaccurate. But it is to say that phase one would be a little bit of an early harvest, and that would lead to a more coordinated and hopefully efficient negotiation mechanism on the phase two of the agreement, which would include more of the structural issues. And I would include in that basket certainly state-owned enterprises and subsidies, as well as the difficult policies associated with Made in China 2025 or high-tech industrial policy in general. But if we are able to reach a preliminary agreement that does cover a number of the 301 issues, and that does lead to a drawdown of some of the tariffs, at least we will have de-escalated this from the current tensions and have built a platform from which we can hopefully engage in more substantive discussions across some more difficult structural issues. So I think that the mood in both Beijing and in Washington is cautiously optimistic that we have a way forward that will satisfy both sides.
Yes, but some people consider this phase one trade deal more of a truce than a trade deal, because we still have the existing tariffs imposed on both sides. And moving forward, and as you mentioned, there are some structural issues that needs to be addressed, such as the structural reform of the Chinese economy and SOE reform. But these are much, much tougher issues to be dealt with. So what is the prospect of both sides sealing a comprehensive trade deal?
So one of the major changes in negotiating strategy that has brought us to this place is the fact that the Chinese negotiating team shifted its policy or its objective of bringing tariffs down to zero from a short-term goal to a longer-term goal, and from a all-in-one approach to a phased approach. And that's why we have this opportunity. But there's another way to look at that, and as you just pointed out, and that would be that it simply prolongs the discussion or extends the discussion of the more difficult structural issues into the future. And I think that that is a valid criticism of this approach. The question of whether or not we can actually get to a phase one agreement is not fully resolved. I think that there are a lot of difficult issues that must be faced before the two presidents initial or sign a piece of paper on November 16th. But then when you look at the second phase, it becomes even more complex. We have to be cognizant that the structural issues, be it state-owned enterprises or subsidies or technology policies, are very sensitive domestic Chinese issues. And they changes in these areas would have a potentially profound effect on governance in China. And no doubt the Chinese side finds it inconvenient to have to negotiate these sensitive issues with a bilateral partner. But it is what it is, and we have to address these issues. I think that as we look at the phase two, we should be sober, but constructive and positive, and try to look at this not as a binary success-failure, win or lose, but rather as making incremental progress forward on issues that are important both to China, to the United States, and indeed to the global trading system. And if we look at it as a incremental series of issues, about global governance, about transparency, about meeting WTO standards, about creating a robust global ecosystem for innovation, then absolutely we can move forward on the phase two issues. If we rather frame it as I win, you lose, then we're probably not going to get very far. But I hope that, and I suspect that, we can do much better than that because it's in the interest of both countries. But this will be a long-term process. These are complex structural issues within the Chinese economy. And both sides need to have a little bit of patience, a little bit of understanding, a little bit of foresight. We should not look at this in terms of 6 months or a year, but rather, what do we want of the U.S.-China relationship in 10 years? Or how about 40 years? That is the appropriate perspective to take.
We should be patient, and dialogue is always better than escalation, trade war.
100%.
Yes. Part of the objectives of Trump's trade war with China is level the playing field and give American companies greater market access in China. Now that we're almost a year and a half years into the trade war, have your member companies given more market access in China, or they actually face more non-tariff barriers as a result?
So it's an interesting question because the answer is both. We have seen a number of improvements in the market access area. And I would highlight a number of firms that have been recently given approvals in the financial services area. And while I'd rather not speak about the individual companies, I can think of six unprecedented approvals opening up markets that are completely new in China. And the more broadly, we are seeking, and I think that the WTO agreement commits to us the right to compete on a level playing field across all of the industries where state-owned enterprises are currently dominant. And we have to remember that that's about 40% of GDP. Including telecom, finance, energy, aerospace, steel, coal, aluminum, oil and gas, shipbuilding, even down to automotive, and many others. So we believe that the WTO agreement allows us equal access there on an MFN basis, But we find that we've been blocked by state-owned enterprises, and that is unacceptable. So that needs to be resolved. Now, so there has been some improvements, particularly in the financial services industries. There is a lot more work to be done. And I would also note that many of our members are reporting an uptick in inspections and visitors and people asking about auditing and local and central government officials. Companies are also concerned about the Ministry of Commerce's so-called entities list. And companies are concerned about the social credit scoring system, which many believe is inherently unfair for foreign companies favoring, again, state-owned enterprises. And I think that those concerns are valid, and we need to watch that and really carefully monitor that and then stand up for our rights if they are being violated. We mustn't be shy. We must be articulate, bold, and precise. But overall, I would sum up and say that the central government of China has been very careful in calibrating in its response to the trade war. And they deserve credit for trying to keep nationalistic urges under control. And but that we do see an uptick probably of local or provincial level government officials who are increasing their inspections or audits or fines or whatever. We're watching that very carefully. We are hopeful to get to a more normal space. The other area where there has been some, I don't want to use the word retaliation, but there's been an effect, is some of our companies have reported that more difficulties in government procurement. And indeed, one could understand it would take a relatively brave Chinese bureaucrat to make a large purchase from an American company in this highly nationalistic time. So the picture is mixed there. As always, it's a complicated story.
There has been a consensus in Washington to go tough on China, but outside of the Beltway, there are constituents, including state governors and university presidents and some businesses, to want to have more engagement and cooperation with China. It would be a huge economic loss for both the US and China to decouple. As a leading voice of the American companies with business operation in China, what role can USCBC play in terms of de-escalating tension?
Well, I agree completely with your assessment that decoupling would be a complete economic loss. But I think that we also have to be very sober and note that to a certain extent, there already has been a bit of decoupling. When I look at the Great Firewall of China, is that not decoupling from the global internet? The splinternet of things. And when I look at the President Trump's executive order banning some telecommunications companies, I have to conclude that that is a form of decoupling. So I think that the danger is that there has been a group of interest groups in both Washington and Beijing that have a tendency to exaggerate the threat from the other side. And the problem with exaggerating the threat is that it leads to an exaggerated response and then a counter response. And the fact of the matter is that China and the United States have very different systems, but neither side is an existential threat to the other at all. And both sides have far more reasons to collaborate than to oppose each other. And what we need is a form of smart competition where we both get stronger and we both respect each other's lanes and allow each other to grow. Current situation is that in both China and the United States, there is a dominant narrative that the high technology from the other side carries with it a unacceptable national security risk. And I would argue that that is overstated by elements in both governments. China should review its multi-level protection scheme of critical infrastructure. As I've said many times, Made in China 2025 violates the WTO in a good number of chapters. Indigenous innovation and technology self-reliance is a form, a Chinese policy of decoupling, and they should be reviewed. And on the US side, I think that there have been some exaggerated responses as well. Clearly, the 232 action against steel and aluminum on national security grounds, I think everyone around the world would agree, was an exaggerated use of national security criteria for protectionism. But there are other examples that we could look at as well. A call for a banning of BYD vehicles in the United States on national security grounds seems ludicrous to any objective observer. And there are probably other cases as well. The problem is that exaggerating the threat means that you're not paying attention to real threats, and you're going to create an exaggerated reaction on the other side. I think cooler heads should prevail, that we should look at each other in a more sober manner, that we should take advantage of all opportunities that we have to collaborate against common challenges. Let us remember that climate change is a common challenge. Terrorism is a common challenge. And indeed, we have many common challenges which are existential threats and for under which U.S.-China cooperation will make us much better off. And right now, we could do a better job at pursuing those common interests.
Yes, we live in the age of cohabitation, both competitive and cooperative.
I like the idea of smart competition. And smart competition means I need to take care of myself and I need to do a better job about getting myself more healthy, eating better, and getting myself ready for action. But that I welcome the competition from the other side if they're doing the same. But let us do so in a respectful manner. If this is a race, a foot race, that would mean eating well and exercising regularly and training. It doesn't mean putting your foot out to trip the other guy. It does not mean canceling the visas of the other guy. It does not mean foreclosing academic or other types of interaction. All of those things actually help us if we look at this from the modality of smart competition and a healthy competitive relationship between China and the United States, which will last us for the next 40 years. Let's look at this for the longer term. Let's not be so transactional. It makes no sense to be transactional between the two greatest nations on Earth. This must be a joint venture, not a transaction.
Yes, so in summary, a sustainable, smart competition is important for US and China and the world.
I could not agree more.
Thank you very much, Craig.
My great pleasure. Thank you.